morning, Africa. Welcome to Daybreak Africa from the Voice of America. I'm James Butte in Washington. Today is Monday, October 11th, and here are some of the stories we are covering. The trial for the assassination of Thomas Sankara 34 years ago begins today, Monday.
Thomas Sankara was the man of integrity. He lived for his passion and his vision to uplift and empower his people of Burkina Faso. His leadership resonates across Africa and beyond Africa.
The shortage of humanitarian aid may affect 10 million people in the DRC. Kenya raises hundreds of thousands of dollars during Elephant Naming Festival. The pleasures and challenges of starting a business in Nigeria. And Sierra Leone's president signs a law abolishing the death penalty.
This goes down to further cement President Julius Maada's credentials as a reformist, who in a period of 3 years had repealed the obnoxious criminal libel law of 55 years old, and now is cementing it with the abolition of the death penalty.
And the impact of Cameroon's separatist war on terminally ill patients. Those stories plus Samson O'Malley's sports are coming up on Daybreak Africa. Four years since the overthrow and assassination of Burkina Faso's military leader, Thomas Sankara, the trial of 14 people alleged to have played a role in his assassination gets underway today, Monday, in the capital, Ouagadougou. Sankara was assassinated October 15, 1987. One of the 14 accused is former Burkina Faso President Blaise Compaoré, a friend of Sankara who led the coup and later ruled the country for 27 years. Compaoré, who has been granted asylum in the Ivory Coast because he's married to an Ivorian, will not be in Ouagadougou for the trial. Nyaka Lagoke is assistant professor of history and Pan-Africana studies at Lincoln University in Pennsylvania. He says Sankara is revered by many Africans because he stood for justice and died protecting justice.
First of all, thank you so much for the opportunity. My first reaction is that I think about Dr. King, one of his famous quotations, that the arc of the moral universe is long, but it always bends toward justice. We waited for 34, 35 years, and then to know that finally there will be the trial of the killers of Thomas Sankara, who is a great African hero, a great Pan-Africanist. But also it is because the popular revolution that happened in 2014, which claimed Thomas Sankara's values, it is because of that revolution that created the condition for the trial to be held.
You mentioned the killers of Thomas Sankara. The former president, Blaise Compaoré, was allegedly implicated, but he is in Ivory Coast. The understanding is that he is not going to be at the trial. What do you make of that?
You know, Blaise Compaoré, you know, I don't usually like to talk about people like that. He's a coward. And then even though we knew that he was the one who orchestrated, you know, the killing of his friends, he came out and then somehow he wanted to deny. And then he was the immediate beneficiary of the bloody coup d'etat that happened on October 15, 1987. And then for 27 years, he ruled using neocolonial policies and advancing, you know, the interests of foreign entities to the detriment of the people of Burkina Faso. And also, he used, like, the national pride of the people of Burkina Faso against the Ivory Coast as he sheltered the rebels to go against Dabo Lorah. And now that he was taken out of power, and then if he was a man of dignity, he should have faced, you know, the justice of his country. But now we heard that he wants to claim the citizenship of his wife because his wife is Ivorian. And somehow he switched his citizenship from the Burkinabe citizenship to the Ivorian citizenship. So, yes, it's unfortunate, but we are witnessing a very important moment in the history of Africa, in the history of Pan-Africanism, for justice lovers and freedom seekers around the globe. And then he is, Blaise Compaoré is, like, we are in the court of history. So then if he is condemned, it will be the confirmation of what all of us we know.
The Economic Community of West African States condemns military coups. We know there's a military takeover in Guinea, Mali. Why do you think the name Thomas Sankara, even though it's 34 years ago, continues to resonate whenever you mention his name?
thank you very much for this wonderful question. Thomas Sankara was the man of integrity, and then he lived for his passion and the vision to uplift and empower his people of Burkina Faso. And then his leadership resonates across Africa and beyond Africa. He's an example of true leadership. And then because of that, in a world which is in a moral decay, where people think that they have to do everything in the name of greed, when we think about a leader who was selfless, then of course he is a good example, you know, to follow. That's why his name is engulfing now. And then Pan-Africanism is back, and there is the revival of Pan-African consciousness. Yes, Kwame Nkrumah, who is like the greatest Pan-Africanist on the continent of Africa, is there. He continues to inspire people, but the young who are organizing across the continent of Africa through People's Powers Movement in Burkina Faso, in Senegal, in Guinea, in Mali, everywhere against French new colonialism, are claiming also the spirit of Thomas Sankara because of what he did, and his legacy endures, and he has knocked at the gates of eternity and of immortality.
Nyenka, thank you so much again, as usual, for speaking with us on Daybreak Africa.
Thank you very much.
Nyenka Lagoke is Assistant Professor of History and Pan-Africana Studies at Lincoln University in Pennsylvania, USA. You are speaking with us from Washington, D.C. Sierra Leone's information minister says the abolition of the death penalty further cements President Julius Maada Bio's credentials as a reformist and a progressive leader. Mohamed Rachman Souare says since coming to power, President Maada Bio has repealed the criminal libel law and presided over the enactment of the gender empowerment law. Last Friday, President Maada Bio signed into law a bill abolishing the death penalty. The country's last executions took place in 1998 when 24 military officers were put to death following an attempted coup in 1997. Souare says the abolishment of the death penalty makes no exception because President Maada Bio believes that government should not execute its own citizens.
We did not sleepwalk into this abolition. It was a fundamental manifesto commitment of then retired Brigadier Julius Maada Bio. And once he ascended to leadership, he was keen to implement not only his manifesto commitment to abolish the death penalty, but this has also been a subject of continuous recommendations by the Human Rights Commission of Sierra Leone, and it was an imperative Truth and Reconciliation Commission recommendation at the end of the Civil War. Successive governments have come and none has been bold enough to implement this. So this goes down to further cement President Julius Maada Bio's credentials as a reformist, as a progressive leader who in a period of 3 years had repealed the obnoxious criminal libel law, who during the same period has presided over the enactment of the gender empowerment and mainstreaming policy, who during the same period has introduced the radical inclusion policy in schools, and now is cementing it with the abolition of the death penalty.
Is there any exception to the ban on death penalty? In other words, is there a particular crime that Sierra Leone would say is okay to use the death penalty?
James, this is a wholesale abolition. It is not a piecemeal panacea. His Excellency noted there were cynicisms and outright opposition, but he maintained the fact that governments should not, under any circumstance, execute one of their own for whatever reason. So there is a blanket abolition for even offenses like murder, aggravated robbery, and mutiny, which the previous law covered. The British High Commissioner to Sierra Leone, during her speech, noted that by this action, Sierra Leone has firmly sealed her place as a leading light and a bastion for human rights and democracy in the region, and urge other leaders to follow President Bio's illustrious example.
What do you say to those who say, for example, the death penalty is necessary because it deters heinous crime?
To those who advocate the retention of the death penalty in our law books on the grounds that it serves as a deterrent to the committal of egregious offenses, I say there is no record anywhere that it does that. In the United States, where it is most preponderantly used, these offenses have continued to persist. In fact, there is evidence to the contrary that in countries where the death penalty has been abolished, the rule of law, democracy and free speech is more grounded and those economies thrive better.
What happens now to those who were on death penalty? What happens to them?
This is an interesting question. The Chief Justice, in his remarks, noted that the law will not have retroactive effect, but that it was still within the powers of the presidency to commute death sentences to life imprisonment, and noted that there's a constitutional provision for cabinet to constitute a committee under the vice president to give such advice to His Excellency. So yes, it's possible, but as it is now, the law does not cover those who have been previously sentenced to life imprisonment before the enactment of this law.
Mohamed Rahman Sware is Sierra Leone's information minister. He was speaking with us from the capital, Freetown. A United Nations official said a funding shortage means humanitarian aid will have to be cut for many of the nearly 10 million people in the Democratic Republic of Congo who are facing multiple crises because of lack of money. Lisa Schlein reports for VOA from Geneva.
A UN official says a funding shortfall means it will be difficult for the United Nations to provide needed aid to Democratic Republic of the Congo. Conflict in eastern DRC has forced 5.3 million people to flee their homes, Africa's largest number of internally displaced people. Additionally, conflict in neighboring countries has prompted more than 500,000 refugees to flee to DRC. The UN resident and humanitarian coordinator in DRC, David McLachlan Carr, says millions of people in the eastern provinces are victims of long simmering inter-ethnic conflicts and conflicts over natural resources. He says the situation is particularly concerning in Ituri, North Kivu, and South Kivu provinces, as well as territories in northern Tanganyika. These protracted conflicts, he says, have left millions of people destitute and in urgent need of assistance. He says it will be difficult to provide that aid because only 27% of the UN's nearly $2 billion appeal for this year has been funded.
Impacting our ability to reach the most vulnerable. And those populations, of course, leave us with a very stark choice. Who do we assist when we have such reduced amounts of assistance? Forcing us to prioritize in the DRC, which is a vast country with multiple crises.
For example, he says the country is prone to repeated epidemics of many diseases, including Ebola, cholera, measles, and malaria. Currently, he says the DRC is facing a lethal meningitis outbreak. McLachlan Carr says a recent World Food Program and UNICEF survey found 26.7 million people suffering from acute hunger.
They're literally living day to day in a precarious situation with an inadequate nutritional intake leading to essentially a weakened condition, which of course makes them more prone and vulnerable to disease across the country.
McLachlan Carr says priority needs include food, shelter, health care, water and sanitation, education, as well as psychosocial counseling for victims of gender and sexual abuse. Lisa Schlein for VOA News, Geneva.
You're listening to Daybreak Africa on the Voices of America. I'm James Butte in Washington. Today is Monday, October 11. As anywhere else in the world, launching a business in Nigeria can be a tough proposition, but Athion Williams had a strong desire to create quality jobs. The founder and CEO of Real Fruit has seen her dried fruit company grow, and this year they launched a new program to also work directly with mango and pineapple farmers. Williams spoke to Ricky Stryak about the pleasures and challenges of starting a business in Nigeria.
I started Real Fruit 9 years ago now, off of a personal mission I had, which was, you know, trying to solve the problem of unemployment on the continent. I was, you know, very shell-shocked by the number of unemployed youth in Nigeria. And while I was working, I thought, you know, what would be the best way to solve this problem? And, you know, for me, it was starting a business that would employ a lot of people. So that's how I landed up in the agribusiness sector, basically pursuing this mission of creating jobs through agribusiness. And that's kind of still my vision till today. But obviously now the vision of the company has expanded around wanting to focus on value-added manufacturing in Nigeria, selling globally, and obviously using more raw materials from farmers across Nigeria, and thus positively impacting their lives. So the mission is sort of threefold, but really started around my quest to solve unemployment.
You are launching an agro-extension program that will work with Nigerian pineapple and mango farmers. Can you tell me a little bit more about that program and how it's different than maybe what you're doing now?
Yeah, so basically our plan is to really deep dive into how to best improve the capacity, quality, and, you know, quantity of our raw materials in Nigeria. And for us, as we grow and as we're scaling up and sort of 5Xing our growing our processing capacity by 5X, we knew that it was imperative on us to work with farmers to increase their capacity to feed our factory, to enable us to feed our factory. And that program is really around, I think, bridging the gap of technical assistance, which is the biggest problem, knowledge and know-how, and obviously more hands-on support to the farmers. So we are bringing in the best knowledge around mango and fruit farming into Nigeria and relaying this knowledge to the farmers, training them, but also having our own network of extension agents who are trained or field agents who are trained that will be visiting these farmers very regularly to ensure that everything is going according to track. So it's not a once-off training or these are the best practices. It's, okay, this is what we need to do and we're holding your hand.
What are your sentiments about creating more jobs, but not just jobs, but decent paying jobs and mm-hmm. jobs that have, you know, safety conditions and things like that?
Yes, for us, of course, that is a huge, huge motivator for me. And also the idea is that creating a lot more formal jobs come with more benefits. So, you know, especially in rural areas where there's a lack of jobs, but, you know, we're creating jobs both in urban and rural areas. And these jobs come with, you know, health insurance, life insurance, access to loans and things like that. So, you know, creating more formal employment and decent jobs in the country definitely improves, you know, the well-being of our employees, and is something that we have proven to do already and we're going to continue to do. So that's certainly, I think, one of the advantages of companies like ours expanding, because we create decent jobs.
That was Afion Williams, the founder and CEO of Real Fruit. She was speaking to Ricky Stryak from Paris. Kenya has raised at least $500,000 towards the conservation of elephants. Kenya's Ministry of Tourism and Wildlife says the funds were raised from corporations and individuals during the Elephant Naming Festival in exchange for the right to adopt and select a name for an elephant. Marie Ojiambo reports from Milwaukee, USA.
Speaking during the magical Kenya Elephant Naming Festival over the weekend at the Amboseli National Park in Kenya, Tourism Cabinet Secretary Najib Balala said that Kenya has managed to tame elephant poaching in the last few years.
Thank God we have tamed poaching in the last couple of years. The numbers have gone down on poaching, but definitely we appreciate that these animals need to be conserved. But conservation is not cheap, it's expensive. So we as government have played a role during the pandemic. We paid almost 1 billion shillings to pay community rangers within the conservancies. Today we have done this event as a name to fundraise. This money will be used to mitigate the challenges that we receive from elephants.
According to the 2021 Kenya Wildlife Census report, the country has a total of 36,280 elephants, representing a 21% growth from 2014 when poaching was at its peak. Balala said last year's border closure helped in the increase of elephants, and that Kenya had an increase in number of elephants by at least 200 newborns.
The minute there's no stress, there's no harassment of wildlife, there will be a boom. And last year was a good year because first the humans were not there, because everybody had to stay home, lockdown. When there's a demand to the market, then there will be a supply through poaching, closing the markets for ivory trade. So China has done a great job by closing that market. So the minute we close the markets, there's no demand, there'll be no supply.
On the other hand, Director General Kenya Wildlife Service John Waweru said that the aim of the Elephant Naming Festival is to secure a future for elephants and their habitats in peaceful coexistence with humans.
This is an event that will happen every year. Even after we finish today's event, we will still continue engaging you, the sponsors, so that we can get more of you to be able to help us look after these beautiful animals. I would like to say we at KWS, we are proud of Kenya Wildlife Service.
Ngamunu Patita, a conservationist working with the Wildlife Foundation, says the funds derived from the event should be used to compensate the communities living with the wildlife that have lost lives, as well as their farm produce destroyed by wild animals.
So if those funds can be plowed back to those communities, if the benefits can be shared with communities and go to programs like consolation for communities that have lost their livestock or they have lost their farm produce, especially due to elephants.
The Chief Executive Officer, Wildlife Research and Training Institute, Dr. Patrick Omondi, says Kenya will be able to secure elephants and monitor the elephants that cross to the neighboring Tanzania.
Through this initiative, we'll be able to create community awareness and global awareness, also raise funds to support interventions, which will include securing connectivity between Amboseli and conservancies. Amboseli is also a cross-border park. Elephants cross the border to Kilimanjaro, and we'll be able to monitor the elephants between here and Kilimanjaro through the use of technology.
Kenya tourism sector says the launch has opened a new era in elephant conservation. There were over 20 elephants named at the magical Kenya Tembo Naming Festival. Reporting for VOA's Daybreak Africa, I am Maureen Ojiambo in Milwaukee, USA.
It's time now for Daybreak Africa Sports, and here is Samson O'Malley in Abuja, Nigeria. A very good Monday morning to you, Samson.
Good Monday morning to you too, James. We begin the sports with the CAF second round 2022 FIFA World Cup qualifying matches played on Sunday across various venues on the continent. Madagascar earned their first victory in the qualifiers for the Qatar 2022 FIFA World Cup with a hard-earned 1-0 victory over DR Congo on Sunday evening to revive faint hopes of battling for a ticket to the quadrennial showpiece. Prior to their home tie against Les Leopards, the Berea had lost three successive matches, including the first leg against the Congolese in Kinshasa last week, but they ensured they earned some slight hope heading into the final two rounds of qualification matches. Group J is still open with Tanzania and Benin staying top with 7 points each, while Congo are third with 5 and Madagascar sits at the basement with 3. Meanwhile, at the National Heroes Stadium in Lusaka, Equatorial Guinea came from a goal down and held hosts Zambia to a 1-1 draw, a result that handed them reprieve as an opportunity to progress to the next round. At the same time, Cape Verde moved up to second in Group C with a slim 1-0 victory over Liberia at the Stade Municipal Adriato Siena in Mindelo. Ryan Mendes scored the lone goal at the stroke of full-time to take the Blue Sharks to 7 points. They are just two shy of leaders Nigeria Super Eagles, who earlier on beat Central African Republic 2-0. Liberia dropped to bottom of the group with just 3 points, but remain mathematically in contention with 2 rounds left. In women's football, as the qualifiers for the 2022 Under-20 Women's World Cup qualifiers continues, Cameroon, Morocco, Zambia on Saturday booked a place in the third round of the qualifiers series. The Azam Complex in Dar es Salaam hosted a victory of a host team on Saturday afternoon, where Tanzania beat Eritrea 2-0. The Tanzanians, who also won the first leg 3-0, prevailed by an aggregate 5-0 and will face Ethiopia in the next round. In athletics, Ethiopia's Seifu Tura won the men's title, and reigning world champion Ruth Chepngetich of Kenya captured the women's crown in her U.S. debut on Sunday at the 43rd Chicago Marathon. The 26.2-mile event was cancelled by COVID-19 last year, but runners were back after 728 days on a flat course through the streets of the Windy City in warm and breezy conditions. Seifu Tura, who didn't qualify for his homeland's Tokyo Olympic squad, pulled away late to take the victory in 2 hours, 6 minutes, 12 seconds. In the female category, world marathon champion Rup Chepngetich clocked 2 hours, 22 minutes, and 31 seconds to beat Emma Bates in 2 hours, 24 minutes, 20 seconds. And that's it on Daybreak Africa Sports. I am Samson
Omale in Abuja, Nigeria. It's back to you, James, in Washington.
Thank you, Samson. Have a good day. And that's it for this Monday, October 11th edition of Daybreak Africa. I'm James Butte in Washington, wishing that you will have a great week.